Welcome to episode 149 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Wolverine and the X-Men by Jason Aaron. And now, the cast begins.
Because, like, after Lucia and I got married, it was, like, pretty much the same thing, except I was wearing jewelry all of a sudden.
Which I need to actually buy him a ring now. He keeps insisting he doesn't need a ring until the actual wedding, but I've explained to him that now that we're actually married, he's mine. And I need to stake out my property.
That's true, Andy.
Fair enough. It's a good point.
It's not for you, it's so everybody else knows.
Exactly. It's all the other
everybody else.
Yeah, but I've sent you like countless $5 stainless steel wedding bands.
I'm not buying you a $5 stainless steel
band. Then you gotta find me something cool, like that arc reactor, like the arc reactor ring.
Get him an onion ring.
How about a what?
Nothing, I was saying, there's an episode of Simpsons where Homer proposes to Marge with an onion ring.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
No, David, I am not going to buy him an onion ring. I can buy him a bowl of onion rings, which he can eat.
How about a Green Lantern ring, like a plastic one?
I have one in the drawer.
Yeah,
there you go.
Green Lantern ring.
I'm not buying you stainless steel, and I'm certainly not buying you plastic.
You got, like, all six colors.
No. There's more than six. I got all of them.
How many colors are there now?
12 of them on all your fingers, so you can be like Kyle Rayner on that one cover.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
You guys ready?
Yep.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another schismed episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
David.
Hello.
And this week, we're finishing up our Marvel Youngins series by reading Wolverine and the X-Men, which collects Wolverine and the X-Men, numbers 1 to 4 by Jason Aaron, with art by... Oh, we should have known this. It's good art, too. Oh, I'm the worst.
Yep, you are. You're like the boss, Andy.
Why am I the boss? You keep calling me the boss. I want you guys to do more so I can do less. With pencils by Chris Bacalo. Bacalo or Bacalo, I don't know. Maybe we'd actually looked it up on time, we would know. But Chris Bacalo.
Yeah, we're so Bacalo. Prepared. And yeah. Color by somebody named Townsend.
Yeah. So, this kind of fit our youngins thing, kind of didn't. I don't know, I mostly picked this for the Youngin' series because of the cover for issue number 4, where Wolverine is up at the chalkboard and there's just a classroom of kids, like, fucking around behind him.
It's a pretty excellent cover.
Yeah, and he has no control of the classroom, which is wonderful for this comic, because he has no control in this comic. So what did you guys think of this one? Just a general feel.
I like it. I thought it was very fun.
It was fun. It was a little short. Well... Like, it was very complete. It didn't leave you, like, feeling like anything was missing, but it was a lot shorter than what we normally read. It was very light.
Yeah. Light is a great word. It's just, it was a light, easy, fun read. Just kind of like, okay, cool, I'll read the next one. This is nice. This is fun.
And I think that's probably because, you know, this is the way the arc went. You know, the arc was 4 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So they just... made the trade 4 issues, so it made, you know, made sense. There's like a clean break at the end, right?
Yeah. Which is not to say there's not heavier stuff in here, or there's not seeds for heavier stuff, but I think you're right, David. I think it's because this is the opening 4 issues. They want to do something light, fun, pull you in, and then they'll get into the thing where Genesis is actually a clone of Apocalypse, you know.
Well, he's actually... Genesis was from... X-Force, I believe.
Okay.
And there was a position where the X-Force were going to kill him, and then him being Genesis, but they didn't because he's a kid. I didn't actually read X-Force. I remember my cousin Brandon telling me about it because he's a big X-Force fan, and so essentially they were gonna kill him, and then they decided to give him a chance because he's a kid. So.
Okay.
But he is, in fact, I don't know if he's a clone of Apocalypse. Yeah, they say he's a clone, yeah.
Yeah, he's a clone, or uses the same DNA or something like that.
And I mean, it sounds like they were the ones who brought him to the school, because I think it's the scene where Logan tells Kitty and Iceman that he's working with X-Force. Mm-hmm. Like, you see Angel and some random dark shadow in the background, and I think that's Genesis.
Yeah, and that's at the beginning of issue number 4.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Angel. Oh, I don't know what happened to him, so but that's awkward. Like... I remember loving Warren Worthington III. He was great, and every single X-Men thing we read, he was like our favorite character. So it was so awkward to see him like thinking he was a real angel of God.
I mean, he might be. The dog came back to life, so
that's true.
There's that.
I think at some point in the comic, around this time, it's revealed that he has healing powers of some kind.
Yeah. Is a secondary mutation, I think they call it.
So maybe this might be the first instance of it. But past the 90s, I don't know that much about X-Men continuity unless it crosses over with Avengers or some other major Marvel book.
Yeah,
so you guys' guess is as good as mine on a lot of these.
Yeah, if it wasn't in that cartoon that was on Fox in the 90s on Saturday morning, I probably don't know it.
Yeah, same here.
But the nice thing is that cartoon was really good and really complete for a lot of things. So my X-Men background is surprisingly full thanks to that comic or cartoon. So the only thing that I didn't get when all the references came up was to Schism and Wolverine and Cyclops. Do either of you know anything about that?
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was just going to say I read a little, but I have a feeling you're going to know far more about this. So
probably. I don't know. I just know it was the event that preceded this, obviously. And, actually, that's about all I know.
Yeah, just the... well, it's just like they split up, and Cyclops took some people, and Wolverine decided to start a school. I don't know. That's kind of all I got.
So... I only read about Schism in the context of how it shapes this, and I guess, what's her name? Idie?
Oh, Idie?
Idie? It's pronounced really weird if you look at the Wikipedia page. I can't really do it, but we'll just go with Idie because that's so much easier. So I guess she was with another group that was not the X-Men. Hope and the Light?
Oh, Lost Generation or something?
Something like that. And
I think the comic was called Generation Hope, actually. Now that
yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. And
oh, okay. I'll say.
Oh, yeah.
So after the events of M-Day where Scarlet Witch said no more mutants, Hope was the first X-Men, or first mutant born after that. And then the five lights are the five that followed her.
Okay.
The five that were born following her.
So Edie's one of the lights.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess Quentin, they mention it in here a bit. He got people to start a riot at some commemoration ceremony or something. And it started like a big fight, and Cyclops basically told Idie and the other people, do what you think you have to, and she killed somebody.
Ooh.
And then she didn't feel bad about it, which is why she's like, you know, do you want, we're all monsters and this is how we act.
Ah.
And I guess it was the reaction that Wolverine had to Cyclops doing that was the rift in their friendship. And just kind of ruined everything. Because he felt like Cyclops handled that situation really poorly. And that the girl should have been Cyclops' responsibility in that case. And it was his fault that she did this.
Or something
along those lines. I don't know.
That makes sense. Because I think Wolverine is okay with killing. But he also has that strong protection for children thing going on. He doesn't want any of them to... have anything bad happen to them. I think he wouldn't want to have that on this little girl's conscience, you know?
Yeah, I think he's okay with him killing people.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. he's older, he's more mature, he knows the consequences, he's done it before kind of a thing, you know? It's like, it's one thing for a soldier to kill somebody, it's another thing for a 12-year-old with an AK to kill somebody.
Right.
Absolutely. So,
oh man, that makes her character way more interesting than this.
Yeah. And I think that's why she's, like, so creepy weird, because at first I was like, what's going on with her? But she apparently has some heavy background.
Well, and that explains a lot about why she attaches to Brew, too. The little Brood kid.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a monster just trying to hide it with fucking fake glasses. You know, he's trying to hide it just the same way she's trying to hide it. By being a normal little girl, you know? That says a lot about why they connect. Huh. All that said, though, I don't feel like I was missing too much while I was reading this.
No, just, I don't...
That really adds to it.
Yeah, I don't think that they, like, left anything incomplete. It just... I always like it if something's mentioned to know what all the background information is, because it, like, makes the universe way more complete.
Yeah. Because you're right, when she says we're all monsters here, I was like, whoa, where did that come from, lady? Damn.
That is one bitter child.
Right? Especially when you put it next to the grown-ups who have been through battles, like Kitty, who is sarcastic and funny through most of this. You know? Mm-hmm. It's like, if anybody's going to be dark and serious, it should be Kitty or Iceman or fucking Wolverine should be dark and serious, not this little kid. So it did feel like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah. But I think that actually is something they could have explained a little better. Because I think Wolverine, she mentions, like, oh, I won't kill anyone else. And the way Kitty handled it made it seem like it could have been a joke or just an awkward statement. Because Kitty's big thing was kind of like, okay, now we're done with that topic.
Yeah, let's move on now.
So,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, that is a really good way to lead into Kitty. It sounds like you really liked her in this.
I liked her as a character in this, yes.
I will
couch it that way.
Okay. I thought she was fun, but it didn't feel like Kitty to me. I'm used to seeing her be, like, a lot more confident. She seemed, I mean, of course you'd be worried if educational inspectors are coming to check out your school, but she seemed very unsure of herself in a way that I wouldn't expect, because, you know, she's already been teaching at Xavier's school before this, so she should kind of know what she's doing.
Maybe her new responsibility as headmistress is an uncomfortable position for her, so that's why she's lacking confidence. You know, as just a teacher, she's not responsible for the well-being of everybody at all times, necessarily. But now as headmistress, she is, so that's one possibility.
That title is a mouthful.
Headmistress, yeah.
Headmistress. But I did like the way that she was sarcastically self-deprecating. Like, my favorite quote that she had was, while I was busy throwing up this morning, I found a gray hair. The whole day I've been pretending it was an illusion and that we're secretly under attack by Mysterio. If you know it's good, you'll play along. Like, I like that statement, but you're right. It's not exactly brimming with the confidence that we're used to. Especially if, as a young kid, which is most of what we read her as, she's been more confident. It's like, it almost feels like regression, but I don't think she ever doubted her abilities so much as doubted their success. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with what you're saying, Randy. It's definitely more of, she's not doubting herself. She's doubting that the whole school can succeed in the same way that...
that Xavier did.
Well, like, the interesting thing is, like, speaking of Kitty, I mean, if you think about the different things we've read her in, the first time we read her for the podcast was very early in her appearances in Marvel, and that was during at the beginning of Dark Phoenix Saga.
Yeah.
And there she is. She's not the super confident person yet, because she's still figuring out what her place in the world is, her place in the X-Men. You know, she doesn't have an offensive power the same way that, like, Cyclops does, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then we see her again in Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men, and with the break world thing and when she finds Colossus.
Yeah.
And I think at that point we see a much more mature and confident Kitty Pryde.
Mm-hmm.
At least in her abilities as a
superhero, right? But then I'm trying to think if we read her in any other instances. Was she in Grant Morrison's X-Men?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I might have tried to block that fetus genocide out of my mind.
She might have been in that. I don't really remember.
I feel like if she was, it was very minor.
Yeah. And then so now we see her here again. And I don't necessarily think... I don't think she is... Maybe she's not lacking confidence. Maybe she's more just cynical. Does she seem... I don't think I really picked up on a lack of confidence from her in this. But she's definitely cynical.
Yeah, I mean,
she's seen a lot of different things happen in the mutant community in her career as an X-Men. You know, people, she's seen friends die, people come back and then die again in the case of Jean Grey. You know, there was M-Day where half of the mutants, or no, not half, like 90% of the mutants lost their powers. Yeah, I mean, she's been through a lot, and here they are trying to do what Xavier did before, but without the same resources that he had and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, maybe she's just cynical about the whole situation. Or yeah, it's her way of coping with the stressful situation. I mean, her quote that you mentioned, Andy, earlier, I think kind of speaks to that.
Yeah, I think you could look at her either direction. And I don't know what that necessarily says about her character. When I was reading these quotes about her, I was thinking about the person in the office. As you're casually walking by, you say, "Hey, how's it going?" You know, and most of the time they go, "Good, good, how about you?" "Great, okay, cool, see you." Like, it's an easy interaction. But I think Kitty's the person where you say, "Hey, how's it going today on, you know, this Thursday afternoon, Kitty?" And she'll go, kind of a thing, you know, like, "Oh, well, is that the other thing?" Or, "Thank God it's only 2 hours to go," or I'll be amazed if I can get through the day. You know, like, there are those people in the office who just say that kind of thing. And you know they're handling their stuff. But it's just like that kind of, "Only 2 hours and I get to get the hell out of here," you know?
Yeah.
Which I think comes off kind of weird, because this comic isn't written necessarily in an office-y kind of vibe. But I think that's the kind of personality she has in this. Which, I don't know. You're right, though. She's a weird one to put your finger on. Whereas I feel like Wolverine is a pretty steady character through a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
He's his normal grouchy kind of self, but he has set goals in the two halves of his life. And it's nice that we get to see this half and not just the X-Force murdering half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because he's actually really awkward in this half. And it's a really nice... contrast to who he normally is, because usually he's very, very certain of the way things ought to be. He's always like willing to pick a fight with whoever the leadership is, that sort of thing. And that's why he and Scott were always fighting. And now suddenly he's the leadership. He's the guy in charge, and he's kind of like, "Oh shit," you know? But I feel like he's still at the very heart of things Wolverine in a really clear way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I haven't read Wolverine in a long time because I feel like there's a lot of Wolverine overload in comics. How he's on multiple Avengers teams and X-Force and this and that. And it's like every time you read Wolverine, he's in his Wolverine costume and he's doing his Wolverine thing. And he's always the same character, you know? But it was really nice to get to see this half because I think it reminds me of... Well, a lot of what he was doing reminded me of X-Men 2, where he has that really awkward conversation with Iceman before Stryker invades the mansion. You know, and he's like, "Where's the beer?" And Bobby Drake's like, "This is a school, bro. There's no beer in the fridge." You know, and so he grabs like a root beer or something and looks at it and says it's warm and then hands it to Bobby, who like cools it down for him. Like that moment where he's trying to get through what's obviously an awkward situation. Like, "Hey, you're banging my little mentorship, you know?" Like, "This is weird here. Awkward conversation. Oh, hallelujah. People to kill. Oh, my God." And I feel like it was cool to see that be the focus of the comic. That kind of weird, awkward, how do we move forward with this? I don't know, just fucking make a decision and go with it and hope it's the right one. it was cool to see that side of him be the focus of a comic and not all the murderings.
Yeah, and it almost seems like a bigger challenge than most of the ones he's faced, because everyone here is like, Wolverine is the last guy you'd expect to open a school. And we know Wolverine can punch people and slice them and dice them and, you know, anything a magic bullet can do. Or is that what they're... Yeah, the weird little blender things.
Yeah,
anyway,
you have one of those, it's great.
Wolverine belongs in an infomercial because he does so many things. He's always the hero. He's, like, this very standout Marvel character. He's kind of like a headliner for them. And this is a real challenge for him, and it's refreshing because I know Wolverine can beat up anybody. And he can take a beating, and he'll get up, and he'll be fine. And that's kind of boring at this point. So, this is refreshing.
Yeah, you know he'll get knocked down, but then he'll get up again. You can't keep him down.
Wow, Andy.
I could not help it. I'm so sorry.
I haven't heard that song in a long time, and it's better that way.
Yep, and yeah. I hope we got stuck in somebody's head, because you're welcome.
It's stuck in mine now, thanks.
So the other, I think the other, well, there's two other major characters in this. There's Beast and there's Iceman. And we'll get to Iceman in a second, because I think he was my favorite. But what did you guys think of Beast in this?
He is the way Beast is always portrayed. If you want to say, like, you know, give me a good example of how Beast acts, this would be a great way to do it. Because he's, like, obviously really smart, but also so frazzled and kind of miles ahead of everyone else. But on the other hand, I feel like that makes him kind of uninteresting. I felt like he was one of the least interesting characters in here, whereas in other comics, we've seen him struggle a little bit with various things, and he's more fun that way.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. We brought up the Grant Morrison X-Men before, and I think I really, really didn't like the weird sexuality that was placed on Beast in that comic. But what I did like about Beast in there was how he was grappling with the fact that his mutation was changing. And he's like, am I going to turn into a fucking, like, amoeba one day? Am I just going to de-evolve into, like, a base single-cell organism? Is that what's going to happen? Like, and that concern was real, and that rocked his entire character down to the core, and that he felt his personality change with his alteration to a cat beast. And, like, that was super deep and involving and interesting, and I feel like here, the most insight we got into his character was the... I've been up since 3 a.m. or I've only had 3 hours sleep this week or some statement like that. Where it's like, okay, yeah, it's working hard, I get it. I don't know.
This just isn't the sort of comic where I think we even expect to see emotional depth.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, he's the one who just built this whole school. You could present him with some manner of challenge.
You say we don't expect emotional depth from this comic, but I feel genuinely like we got a lot of it out of Bobby Drake, out of Iceman.
Okay, yes, that is true.
Right, and like, it was done in such a really good way in this comic where I couldn't tell if Wolverine's pep talk was meant to piss him off or not, or if that was just a happy byproduct, or like, that ambiguity gave us insight into Bobby Drake's character. How he's like, you're gonna call me untapped potential? Fuck you, buddy. I will show you untapped potential, you asshole. And like, that different lashback that I wasn't expecting was like, oh, that's who this guy is. Got it, that's great. You know, and like, having him embrace that impulsiveness and that sort of, I don't have to prove myself to anybody kind of feeling, that was like, yeah, I know who this guy is. Okay, cool. I like this guy. Let's go.
Yeah, and like, you can kind of tell he had a bad past regarding being a mutant too. Not like in the dark way, but it sounds like people really make fun of him for his powers. Like, they say, oh, that's so lame, and what good is it? Which strikes me as odd, because it actually seems like it'd be really useful.
Right, everything. He was always my favorite when I was a kid. He was my favorite X-Man. I was like, hell yeah, Bobby Drake! Iceman is cool.
His power is basically, like, let him fly and fight really well and, like, freeze people. That's, like, nothing wrong with that. But I didn't mind that they played it up here just because it was interesting to see him, like, he developed more than any other character.
Yeah, and that happened in the first couple issues. Because
mm-hmm.
Wolverine, I think it was a way for the author to say, look at this new characterization of Iceman we're going to have. And we'll just put it out there right now by Wolverine pushing him to the next level or whatever you want to call it, you know.
Yeah, but I like the way that he was able to take that drive, turn it into an impulsive decision on the battlefield to, well, I don't know if I could even do this thing where I can make, like, multiple copies of myself and control, like, a couple dozen ice bodies at once, but it seems like it's in my grasp of power to do, so let's just fucking try it. Let's just try it. And then it works, you know? And that was great to see him just extend himself in the moment and embrace his ability to do something new. And then I like how he channeled that combat impulsiveness into a very impulsive personal decision.
I wish we had seen a little more of how that turned out, though, because I think the last place we left off, Kitty was, like, kind of freaked out and running away from discussing it, right?
Yeah. So, and I don't know if there's, like, background between their two characters. All I know is Kitty Pryde is with Colossus.
Yeah, she just dumped him.
Yeah, but Colossus is gone, right?
Well, he's with Cyclops.
Yeah, not like in with Utopia. Cyclops, but with
no, he's yeah. hanging in out Utopia with like Cyclops.
Bros. Okay, yeah, they're bro fisting, not bro bumping.
Yeah.
Yes, Andy, I think only you were confused by that.
I don't know. We were talking about couples, and then you said with Cyclops, and I was like, when did this happen?
Cyclops and Colossus are in the same location.
Okay.
And it's, geographically, they are close to each other.
I think Kitty dumped Colossus right before this, too. So it wasn't just, like, that they went their separate ways. It sounds like they broke up, like, dramatic thing.
Well, then it's understandable that there would be some awkwardness for her with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I applaud Bobby Drake for going out and being like, so are we going to talk about this or like something a little bit maybe? But I do think it would have been nice for the author to give us a little bit of a conversation. But I guess we kind of got what Kitty Pryde felt about it. A whole lot of uncertainty.
And probably it's going to come up as the story goes on. I certainly don't think it was a throwaway moment, you know?
No. I mean, she got pregnant, right? That's how it works.
Yes.
That's what happens when you kiss a snowman. Yeah.
Only when you kiss a snowman, though.
Yeah, only the snowman. Which, now that I've brought that up, that panel was really freaky.
When he kissed her with one of the ice bodies? Or was it him, or was it the ice?
I think he did, and the ice was fighting. But that wasn't freaky. What was freaky was the, oh my god, my big old belly!
Oh god, okay.
That panel.
I feel like that was the weirdest cliffhanger ever. That takes the cake.
I don't know that it was weird. I think it was just the posing and the reveal. Like they had to... They couldn't just have a bump be drawn under the clothes. They had to have the belly, like, sticking all out. Which I understand it would, because, you know, size change, clothes don't, right? Like, I understand, but it was just, like, it felt like, hey, look, there's a pregger belly.
It was really sudden, too. I mean, it was just one panel of that.
Well, it's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, although...
You have to tune in next week for more.
I'm fine with the cliffhanger. It just... It was drawn kind of awkward, is all I'm saying.
We've had a lot of, like...
I don't know.
Have you noticed in the comics we've read for this arc, we've had a lot of, like... By a lot, I mean two. Mysteriously appearing and disappearing pregnancies or possible pregnancies.
Wait, what was the other one?
Jewel.
Oh, shit, that's
Young
right.
Avengers.
Yeah.
Her baby disappeared. And then reappeared.
Her baby comes back, though.
It's the disappearing fetus.
So, yeah, I just didn't feel, like, I don't know, that there was something just a little creepy about that ending where I was like, okay, because she seems, like, really surprised, obviously, because she's suddenly looking very pregnant.
Yeah.
But it was just a strange place to leave off.
Like, I get it's a cliffhanger, and, you know, cliffhangers are what keep comic books rolling as you read them, because, oh my god, what's this pregnancy from? I don't know, it just...
That's the thing. I feel like a cliffhanger should make you want to go back and read the next one. That one was kind of like, okay, gonna back away slowly.
That wasn't my reaction.
No, mine either. But it just, I don't know.
Yeah, it was just... Maybe too much vomit, too. Not a fan of that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was, like, 5 panels of vomiting.
Yeah.
And by 5, I mean probably... It was probably actually 2.
She threw up a lot in this comic.
Yeah, huh?
Which, I mean, I think
maybe
we're supposed
to... Maybe it's not a sudden pregnancy?
We're supposed to think it's nervousness.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe that's what she thought it was, though.
Yeah.
Maybe it's been pregnancy the whole time, and it just was, like, not showing, and then suddenly showing!
Well, she didn't seem to think that it was pregnancy until she was showing.
Yeah. So, do you want me to just go ahead and, like, spoil what it is? Because I read ahead a bit.
Oh, I read ahead, too. Actually.
Okay.
No, yeah, don't spoil it on the show.
Okay.
You can spoil it to me afterwards, because, it's not that I didn't like this comic, but there's a lot of good comics worth reading, and I don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm probably not going to read on in this one. Well, maybe, I don't know. I might read on in this one, because I did really like the art. But before we get to the art, let's talk about this is supposed to be a Youngins arc, right, with kids, and where the focus is supposed to be on kids first.
I don't think we've talked about them much at all.
No. So what did you guys think of this cast of young X-Men?
I feel like Quentin was probably the most fleshed out, mm-hmm. and because of that, maybe the most interesting. Just because, you know, he's played up as the rebel, and we know that he's a felon and a terrorist, and he, I think, was the guy who caused the schism event.
Yes.
But he does something really nice. Is it Krakoa?
Yeah, Krakoa.
Yeah, he's just like, hey, I know that you're feeling unhappy. And he actually thought that it'd be a good idea to sit down and talk with this thing instead of just fighting it, which strikes me as something that shows that he's actually a really bright kid. And maybe his thing is, like, he almost seems like someone who's really smart, and it makes him bored and then do bad things.
Yeah. I think that's his character is definitely the idle hands type.
Yeah, but I liked him. He actually seemed, despite what everyone said about him, like a pretty good person in this.
Well, I think that's just... I think people look at him and look at how he expresses himself and say, oh, this kid's a stupid punk. You know, like the shirt like the shirts he wears... Or, like, the sign that he says, like, the sign that was my favorite, one of my favorite panels is when he's kicking in the lawn chair and he has a sign behind him that says, send more sentinels.
Yeah.
Like, shit like that, and he's got his shirt, like, let me know when all the humans are dead, kind of a thing. Like, you look at his outward personality and you're like, oh, fuck this kid, man, this fucking little brat. But, legitimately, he's a smart kid, and he can have that attitude because he has the intelligence and ability to back it up.
Yeah, and when we see him, like, in that predicted future, he's one of the X-Men, and he's cooperating with them and part of the team.
He seems almost like a leadership type, too.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Hopefully he grows up to be, like, you know, a mature, interesting person. That is the best hope for his character, because I think he has a lot of promise.
Mm-hmm. And I like... The other one that I liked was, I actually liked Kid Gladiator.
Yeah, he's pretty funny. Yeah. He's the bro of the school.
Right, like, Okay, so I grew up in the Central Valley of California, where everybody's rednecky. But it seems like every other grade, there was some new kid who came up from Southern California. Like, their family moved up here because they found a better job and the houses were cheaper, you know? Because in the Central Valley, all the housing is way cheaper than on the coast. And it's like every other year, there'd be some kid who moved up from Orange County and thought he was so cool because he used to surf on Sunday mornings and he had long hair and he was like kind of bro-ish and thought he was really cool and walked around the school with a swagger just because of where he was from. And I think Kid Gladiator is that guy. that douchey guy from the cooler part of the state that comes to your podunk part of the state and thinks that he's better than all of the kids there just because of where he's from.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kid Gladiator is definitely from the cooler part of the galaxy.
Right?
Yeah.
Not this mud ball of Earth like this place. Why am I even here? It's so stupid.
And like, he's like the species level of racist, too. He's just like, yes. Dumb humans.
But I like that translated so well to my experience. Because, I think that's something that comics are important for. Is that it can show that relationship in a more dynamic or complex way than you'll get in reality. Right? Like, in reality, I just have to roll my eyes and say, fuck that guy, because he's a douchebag. But in this, you get a vision of the future where Kid Gladiator's not a douchebag anymore. Where he grows out of it, he overcomes his own faults and becomes a part of a team of the people that he was talking down to. So it shows you that these people don't always turn out being like this their entire life, which is really neat, because if you are a teenager reading this comic, you'll see that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like he seems like a bratty kid, and most bratty kids do grow up eventually, right?
Yeah.
Because I think they asked the Shi'ar if they'd take... if they'd take him back, and they're just like, nope.
When they laughed at him for a minute and a half.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, he's not, like, dangerous or even bad. He's a little snot.
Yeah. I am the royal prince of the Shi'ar Empire. I think Brew is a type of high school kid as well. I just don't know the type well enough to comment on it.
He reminds me of Beast. Like, he's a small version of Beast.
Yeah.
Like, the way he talks, yeah. And... Well, he's more like Beast from the 90s cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're right. Where he's got that visual, brutal side, but that's not what he really is.
And but then, like, the way his choice of words and the way he talks and stuff reminds me of Beast.
Well, he wants to overcome it so bad that it seeps down into his language, that effort that he's making.
Mm-hmm.
And Brew does come off as, like, a lot more of an ass-kisser.
Yes, he's definitely a teacher's pet type, too.
You know he's totally a narc, because he's going to be the one who's like, teacher, someone's doing such and such, is that okay?
Yep. Oh, yes, I can't wait for that moment to happen in this.
Yeah. But he's sweet, and I really like how he's introduced as a character, because he's like, well, I am different from the rest of my species, and the fact that I am not killing you, eating you, or impregnating you should be evidence about that. So, it's kind of like, well, he obviously knows how to do these things, probably, but he's just choosing not to, because he's a nice guy.
And I love that the pair that was picking on him was Hellion and Glob. Of all people, Glob is picking on somebody? Really, bro?
Well, that's what you do when you're at the very bottom of the totem pole. You find someone else below you.
Yeah, shit rolls downhill.
Yep, but I don't think Brute deserves that at all. He seems like a pretty stand-up guy, and he's got a 22% chance to cure cancer.
But what is it, a 35% chance to end up killing somebody? And then I think we talked about Edie before, and I think she's kind of the goth in the group. If you had to typecast her, if you had to, but I don't even know if that really fits.
Nah, because she seems like a legit nihilist.
Not only yeah. a poser goth nihilist.
She has problems. And it actually makes me a little sad and makes me feel like they should be doing a better job with the school because she says crap like she says. And I feel like someone should be like, okay, let's talk about why you think that instead of being like, okay, everyone's uncomfortable now, let's move on.
The school, yeah, what the school needs is a counselor.
Yes.
That's what it needs. It needs somebody to sit people down and say, okay, let's talk about your mutant drama.
Especially in the social context of the Marvel Universe, you think that if there are super-powered kids and they're mutants and there's a lot of, like, hate directed at them, then you really do want someone to try to work with that instead of just teaching them how to fight
mm-hmm.
or English lit, which I can't imagine Wolverine teaching that. But they need someone to talk to, and I feel like Kitty and Wolverine are kind of not apt at doing that. Beast is too scattered and busy with his own thing. So maybe that role will fall to Iceman. I feel like he could do it.
Yeah.
But he's busy babysitting Angel. So.
So who's actually teaching around here other than Husk?
Dupe. Dupe was a substitute.
Rachel Summers.
Oh, yeah. Rachel Summers. She was mm-hmm. teaching defense. Not Toad. Poor Toad the janitor. There's lava in my floor. I just need a bed.
I felt so bad for him. And he's like, do I have to clean this up by myself at the end of the fight?
Oh,
he's
God.
Like, yep.
Yeah, you do. You do. Sorry, bro.
Poor Toad. He doesn't deserve it.
Go blame the Hellfire Club.
Okay, we should talk about these villains.
Oh, yeah. What do you guys think of the Bratz?
Fuck them.
Yeah, there's... I think they're a good choice of villains for these guys, but man, are they annoying.
Yeah, ugh, the little girl. I don't even know her name.
The penguin hammering girl?
Yeah, she's just... She's bratty and evil for brattiness and evil's sake, and I can't stand that. At least the kid in the lead seems to be... motivated by his own sense of smugness.
His own thirst for kind of power, maybe?
Yeah, like, there's something very evil about him, even if we don't know it quite yet, but the rest of them just seem kind of like dumb kids.
Well, there's the Frankenstein kid.
Yeah.
Is his name Baron Frankenstein or something?
I think so.
Is it really?
Well, they were calling him the Baron, and then whenever somebody mentioned the word Frankenstein, they were like, don't say the F word.
That's right.
Hmm.
Right. And so yeah. He's the person who got the Frankenstein monsters, the flamethrowers.
Yeah, he seems like he's interested in trying out his techie stuff, because he was also using electromagnetic waves to mind control Krakoa or something like that. Right, so he has some motivation, I think. Then there was a fourth one, right, who just didn't do anything?
So far as I can tell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Well, it's like only the main guy was like, what is his name? Cade? I don't remember what his first name was.
Cade Kilgore.
Cade Kilgore,
that's right.
And then the Baron are the only two that actually did something. The other two watched, but I'm assuming that they are the other parts of the... I don't know if they're part of the Hellfire Club for sure. I don't know what role belongs to each of them.
It's just, seeing those kids, I look back at, like, comics from the 80s and 90s, and I'm like, I remember when the Hellfire Club was cool. Yeah. You know? Like, it was just... It seemed really lame to have these dumb brats. And there was... It did lead to a good scene where Daredevil comes in and serves papers to Kilgore. That was great.
The only thing I can say in favor of these guys as villains is that if you're going to set up a comic kind of about teenagers, maybe focused a little bit audience-wise more towards teenagers, just a little bit maybe, all of the people in the school have a certain authenticity to them. Edie's dark like a goth, but we know why, and there's a good reason for it. And so she's not a goth. And so it makes perfect sense. And all of these people are certain types, but we can see those types for what they are because they have an authenticity to them. Whereas the villains are just kind of there. Like, that villain Penguin Hammering Girl, she's the fake goth. She's just wanting to hit penguins with a hammer because she thinks it's evil and wants to do it just because she thinks it's evil. And she has no concept of what it means or why she's doing it or what... There's no authenticity to these villains. And I think that's what makes them good villains for a teenage kind of book, perhaps. That's the only thing I can say maybe in favor of these guys as villains.
I think that's pretty applicable to any villain. Just because evil for evil's sake comes across as really trite and silly. And people are far more likely to be engaged if the villains have good motivating factors and can set up, you know, like a good argument. For instance, Superman and Lex Luthor. Each one has a pretty legitimate argument on which to base their side of the story. And obviously Lex Luthor kind of goes with any means for his end, which is not correct, but he can be sympathetic in what he wants for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get that here. This is chaotic evil. So it's not... There's no draw. We can't say, oh, there may be a philosophical correctness to these kids. It's just they're bad.
No.
Okay, so what did you guys think of the art then?
I felt like it reminded me, in terms of character design, of Frank Quitely's art.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of like more rounded faces, softer features. But... And I thought it worked really, really well for everyone except Wolverine. He looked a little young and boyish in this. Not at all like the grizzled Wolverine that we all know and probably love.
See, but I liked him like that here. Because I think, not necessarily the character design of it being like that, but I think what I liked about it was that it reinforced my thought that this isn't the Wolverine that I'm tired of reading. Right? Like that grizzled 5 o'clock shadow Wolverine is the one I'm tired of reading. That I've read since I was a kid and is written the exact same today. This Wolverine is clearly different, and the art direction shows me that this Wolverine is clearly different.
That makes sense. Just kind of, you see a softer side of him personality-wise and then visually?
Yeah, okay. I think so. But it is a little bit off-putting if you have read Wolverine before and you're like, who is this kid? Because it's completely different.
Yeah. But that was the only thing that weirded me out. I really liked the frame layouts, and I think you put it really well. Like, how it creates this aesthetic of what the comic should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the art style for this is perfectly matched for the writing. Like, the art style is busy and cluttered and frantic, while still being really detailed and purposeful. Like, there's scenes where they're all, like, sitting at a conference table in this, like, big room, and there's just crap sitting everywhere, and it looks really cluttered and messy, except if you look at it closely, the mess is really detailed. Like, there's a dartboard with Cyclops' face on it and a bunch of darts thrown in. And it's just kind of like off to the side. You know, it's not in the frame anywhere, but it adds to the cluttered, frantic feel of the page while still obviously being purposeful and not bad art. If it's bad art, then it's just kind of crap for crap's sake. But this, you can tell, was put there as a detail for you to see. And I feel like and the style conveys the story really clearly while mirroring the tone and vibe of the comic's content, and it's a perfect fit, I felt like, for how this feels and looks and is written. It's one of those instances where the writer-artist make a good team, and then the product is good because of their coupling.
Definitely. And admittedly, there were a couple places where I felt like we got a bit of a word bubble overflow. And there was a lot of text, and I felt like the text is frenetic in and of itself, which is good, because it goes with that whole kind of vibe that you just described. But at the same time, when you stop and read the text, you look at that balloon, and then you lose your momentum going through the frames. Mm. So it kind of slows you down more than the plot or the art itself would indicate you ought to. So I think that's probably a really big challenge, too, of having art like this, where it's so visually crazy. You need to have kind of lots of detail and movement and really beware of anything that might slow it down.
Yeah, and you probably have to push some text from one frame to another. Because if you get one of those big frames with awesome, crazy detail, you can't then cover up all that beautiful artistic detail with word bubbles. So then you got to push the word bubbles to a frame with less detail, but then that frame gets a little bit crowded because the text was pushed to it. I don't know necessarily if that's what's happened here. I don't know. We'd have to talk to the artist to find out, but it feels kind of like that might be what happens, or what's happening.
So did you have like a favorite panel or anything in this?
Honestly, my favorite thing about this art-wise, I like the art and style and the fit and everything I said before, but my favorite thing is the covers. All four of the covers for these four issues were great. Number two is good, where it's just Krakoa's jaw and Wolverine jumping into it all by himself. Just kind of like swiping at massive jaw teeth of the island. Like, this is fruitless, but fuck it, I'm going in. It was perfect. All these covers were just beautiful and perfect fit for this comic, too. What about you, since you asked me?
I really like any time they drew Quentin kind of making... He had such great emotive facial expressions. Like, and it ranged really well from general annoyance to bewilderment. He looks like such a little snot, you know? And there's that... It's that scene that you mentioned earlier where he's sitting in the lawn chair with the sign that says, "Send more sentinels." And he's just, like, completely chilled out. And you see the wreckage behind him, and it's like, you know, that sort of humor in the art I really appreciate.
Yeah, and there's the other moment for me with Quentin Quire was when he was like, "What do you mean I don't know who I am? I'm Quentin Quire. How can you not have heard of me?" And then there's, like, the panels where it's just, like, pink in the background. He's, like, poking his eyes, like, up into the frame almost. Those panels are great, too. Because that's just, you can get that sense of, like, hey, no, I'm important, guys. Hey. Like, that was great. Yeah, he was done really well in this, too. What about you, David? Do you have a panel or a moment, or?
I don't know. I think that, you know, one thing that I always appreciate in comics is good facial expressions, and some artists are not that good at it. But here we get, you know, excellent emotion and facial expressions on these characters, and I think that's really important in a comic book about teenagers.
Yeah,
because you know. Stereotypically, teenager stuff is an emotional roller coaster. So, you know, the artists, I mean, we get different artists, right? There's a different penciler for 1 through 3 and then number 4. And both of them, even though their art styles are a little bit different, they both do a great job of expressing the emotions of the characters. And one person you can see it on is Warren Worthington. He's, like, so happy all the time.
Yes.
And for a character who's, like, kind of spaced out and totally, like, placid, he you see a lot, you can tell what's going on in his, you know, you can see where he's at emotionally really well. So, you know, I if I thought really hard, I could probably find one panel that I absolutely loved, but, you know, I think, like I said, the one thing that stood out for me is the facial expressions.
Yeah, you can look into his emotion through his facial expression on the page, and that's perfect. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys ready to rate this one? I guess this will be a little bit short of an episode.
That's okay. Short story arc, too.
Yeah, so. I mean, only 4 issues to tear through, get through pretty quick. How about you go first, Jen?
Okay, I'm going to give this one a 3. I thought that it was fun and enjoyable. It didn't necessarily have the pull to read more. Like, when we read Young Avengers, I started, you know, reading them on Marvel Unlimited, just tearing through them like, oh, this is so much fun. I went to go buy the trades, and then they didn't have them, and I was, like, crushed. You know, there was, like, a real drive to buy the comics and consume them, which is actually kind of rare for me. And while this was fun, I think maybe I'd even rate it higher if we hadn't just read Young Avengers. Hmm. But it didn't have the same kind of tug to that was saying, like, read me. I don't necessarily know if I'm going to ever find the time to go and read the rest of these, because there's a bunch of issues on the Marvel site that are available, but I'm busy, right? Hmm. So it doesn't hit that high on the priority list, which makes me rank it a little lower than I might otherwise. But I do love the art, and I thought it was just a fun, light story. Just some nice, good end-of-summer reading. Let's put it that way. So, a 3.
Okay. How about you, David?
I think I'm going to give this a 3.5. I liked it a lot, and I think I will definitely try to make effort to read more of this. I've said this in the past before. I really like comics that are fun and kind of lighthearted, and I feel like this definitely fits that bill. You know, there's definitely conflict and interesting stuff, but the comic is not too serious, and you know, I appreciate a good serious comic sometimes, but for the most part, I read comics as a, you know, as a fun hobby, and so the more fun a comic is and the more interesting characters there are, it definitely lends itself to my taste. And this comic seems like it's very continuity heavy, and I'm a glutton for continuity. So and X-Men is something that I only have so much of my monthly income that I can allot to comics, and one of the things I've done is I've kind of knocked all X books off the list, but this is certainly, I feel like, a good place for me to you know, work back into it, maybe, but not get them on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, but certainly something when I've read all my comics for the week and I want to read something else, maybe this is something I'll pick up.
Yeah, and like the first 30 issues or something are all in the Marvel Digital Comics thing, so that's awesome.
And there's lots of, you know, the trades are all on the shelves. I was browsing at my comic book store last week looking, and they have like 5 or 6 volumes already too. So
mm-hmm. Nice. Well, I am gonna side with Jen and give it a 3, just because she compared it to Young Avengers, and I was like, I don't know, like, I think the characters I liked more in Young Avengers. I love Miss America Chavez. I really, really loved Kid Loki. Novar is just cool, and there's no way around it. You know, and I think I like the characters in Young Avengers better. But this, considering it feels more targeted towards a teen audience than that did, or I don't know why I feel that way about this, but for some reason, this feels like it's not trying to be as highbrow as Young Avengers is trying to be at times. That said, I think I had more fun reading this than I did Young Avengers because of all the melodrama that came up in that book, compared to this, where there's less melodrama and more just authentic feeling character interaction. That said, it kind of says something that I didn't really latch on to any of the characters in this outside of Iceman, just because I always thought he was cool, and him showing up and being a badass and saying, fuck all you guys, I've been a badass this entire time and I'm going to prove it to fucking nobody. I was like, hell yeah, you've been a badass the entire time. I've known that since I was fucking 12. Like, that was the only thing that made me gravitate to any given character here. But the same thing I said about last week, I'll say about this week. Marvel's doing a really good job at pairing authors and artists. And this team is just great together, because the feel of the writing matches the feel of the art and the style and the tone, and all works together in just the way it's supposed to. So as much as I didn't latch onto any characters, man, that art brings up the score at least a 0.5. Like, I feel like this would have been average, but that art's just it's just a great pairing. So I'm giving it a straight up 3 because it is a little bit better than average. So speaking of better than average, we're going to start our super series on Justice League International next week. We're going to read Justice League International Volume 1, then formerly known as Justice League, then I Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League, then Justice League Generation Lost Volume 1. That's right. We're going to do 5 issues all on Justice League International. You know why? Because they're my favorite. And also, they're good comics. Yeah. Was that 5 or was that just 4? That was
you just only 4. Mentioned 4. You forgot yeah. Generation Lost Volume 2.
That's right. We're going to do both volumes of Generation Lost. Not just 1, not just 2, but both volumes. So yeah,
and 5. We're splitting that into 2 episodes because it was a 24-issue series that came out every other week.
It's going to be a little bit like when we read 52 and had to do 12 issues of an episode.
Yeah, but this is good, and it's a lot more focused than 52 was. And I don't mean that as a knock against 52. I love 52. It's one of my favorite event comics.
Word. So that starts next week. And I would understand if you didn't get all that down, because it's fucking 5 episodes. It's going to be great. So if you need a rundown of what all I said, just go to www.atomicpoweredsupergas.com. On the right, there's a button that says Upcoming Shows. Click on that bad boy, and there's a list of all 5 of them we got coming up. Can you tell how excited I am to do 5 episodes of Justice League International? This is going to be great, guys. You're all going to get to know Guy and Boostel and fucking Rocky Red. It's going to be great. I'm going to love this so much next month. Oh, I'm going to love it. So that's what's coming up. So if you have an idea for another super series we can do, or just a regular series, or one shot like we did with From Hell, because it was a listener request, you can send us a listener request at our email, which is
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Ooh, that was like radio. Gmail.com.
Oh, man. That's all I was going for. hey, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Is that what I sound like in the intro?
Not at all. Don't worry.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And hit us up on the social media, twitter.com/APSupercast, facebook.com/APSupercast, or APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye. And then we stayed at a hotel that was filled, like, entirely with bros. That was a thing.
That sounds great.
We didn't realize. We thought it would be, it was just, like, it was the Flamingo, so it's, like, across from the Bellagio and Caesar's Palace, right in the middle of the strip. And it was cheaper, and we thought, oh, it's, like, older, maybe old people go there. Because it's, like, 50s. It was entirely bros that were doing, like, the spring break thing. They weren't so bad after the first day. We sat down for, like, an hour and watched a bunch of them try to pick up random chicks and fail miserably. So that was pretty good.
Yeah, bros are pretty good to people watch.
Yeah.